Heaven High!
Heaven High. Yeah. John's back and relaxed from his cruise vacation. He's checked his privilege and he realizes that he's still got 8 out of the necessary 10 points before you become royalty. So getting close and well done.
Thank you. This is episode 244 of rumdoings.com.
What if somebody wanted to communicate with us?
Podcast at rumdoings.com. Or they could tweet us at rumdoings. Or they could Facebook us. Or they could Elo.
But what if they want to send us...
Do we have an Elo account, maybe?
I don't know what that
Everyone's
is.
Everyone's on Elo. Do you remember Elo?
What if they... Yeah, I'm on Google Wave. What if they wanted to send us a letter?
They could write to John and Nicholas Mailer.
Actually, they can do this. I'll give my office address.
Go on.
John and... Attention of me, Nick Mailer. 24 Ganton Street, London, W1F7QY. Send us a letter or a postcard there, please.
Or a bomb.
Or a bomb, if you must, yes. And by bomb, I don't mean that Parisian chocolate ice creamy dessert. I mean an explosive device.
Cool. Just to be clear. So the topic this week is, now that Jeremy Corbyn's to appear on Gogglebox, is he finally ready to be Prime Minister?
Is he going to appear on Gogglebox?
We can't discuss it, I'm afraid.
No, I'm not going to say whether he's ready to be Prime Minister. But I mean, is there a story that this is based on? Or is this just nonsense?
I'm not answering. I've sent you an IM because I can't discuss it on the podcast.
Okay.
But you can click on that link.
I promise you I won't. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not going to say anything further.
Good.
Great. Good. Look forward to Prime Minister Corbyn.
I have been on a cruise, you know.
So you were worried that going on a cruise without me might lead to disability or death. Did it lead to either
Laura
of those?
Laura was worried that we weren't taking our grown-ups with us.
Yeah.
No, it was fine, obviously. We went with Cunard.
Mm-hmm. But you went in a scummy class, so you didn't really get the full experience, sadly.
Well, we weren't in a princess or a queen suite, that's for sure.
Mm.
We were in the very, 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 very front left cabin on deck 7.
That's how they say it in nautical terms these days, front left.
That's right.
Yeah.
To use the boat parlance.
Yes.
To use the vernacular of the nautical human.
Yeah.
We were, and it was nice. We had a balcony. That's what matters.
It does.
And it was quite nice. But here's the problem. Never, ever go cruise with celebrity, because then you can't cruise with anyone else ever again.
Oh, okay.
That's the problem. So even though we'd gone princess last time, do you remember last time we had a Rum Doings cruise?
Yes.
We went princess. Everyone listening going, these snooty snobs going on that. You can save up and go on a fancy holiday too, if you really dedicate your life to this endeavour.
Or what you can do is, if you happen already to be... in America, and I know that already is cutting out some privilege, but if you've got air miles, whatever, and you can be in America, you can get a kind of 4 or 5 day cruise to the Caribbean cheaper than it is to stay in the worst motel in New York State per night. I know that because I did that once, because it was the cheapest way I could. I had a 3 or 4 day hiatus between two meetings, and it was cheaper to go to the Bahamas and come back again than it was to stay in a rat infested motel in New Jersey. So, yeah, there are ways and means.
But, I mean, yeah, no.
But the one you went on was a little nicer than a rat, than a. But you still didn't like it because it wasn't celebrity.
No, like, the thing was, obviously it was better than UKIP Seaways.
Mm.
But, yeah, it just, everything, like, celebrity just seems to be too good and spoils it for everyone.
You go,
oh, this is okay, but it's not quite celebrity.
Hold on, were there British people on board?
There were. It was predominantly... Canadian, in our experience, Canadian, German, and Japanese, and the main languages broadcast were German, Japanese, and English.
Japanese, not Chinese.
Yep, indeed. Yeah. Vast numbers of Japanese people on board.
Why?
And German people and Canadians. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe it was just a booking of particular. I don't have. I have no idea. But those were the languages they were broadcasting the announcements in. So that was obviously the core core on board.
But you managed to slum it and you survived.
Just about. We went to Olympia.
Oh, yes. And you met the gods.
Where they invented running.
Mm-hmm.
And Toby tripped up and slammed his face, forehead into a wooden step.
Ruddy idiot.
And so if you're going to smash your face into something at Olympia, make it a 2,500-year-old stone, not a new wooden step.
Ruddy idiot.
What an idiot. Then we went to, my brain stopped, Dubrovnik.
Ah, was that horrible?
Which was splendid, really great, Dubrovnik. Highly recommend it, want to go back.
Mm-hmm, good.
That was really good. Then we were meant to go to Split, but they had to cancel it.
Because it had split.
We had, there was going to be major fog in Venice, so they had to go into Venice a day early before the port was closed.
Uh-huh.
And so we missed a whole stop.
Oh, no.
I know. And then we were in Venice and then we came home.
So one of the nice things about going on cruises is that you get to find ports that you do wish to return to for a more substantive trip. And I suppose in this one it was Dubrovnik.
Dubrovnik, yes. It's very exciting because it is King's Landing from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And that's fun.
Yes.
I hadn't really put that together. I knew when we were booking it, I saw that you could book a Game of Thrones themed excursion, but I hadn't realised how much I was actually just going to be in King's Landing. That's very cool. Yeah. Got to walk down the road where Cersei was pedalted in the nude.
Were you nude as well?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. And did everybody shout shame at you?
Everyone did.
Yeah.
That was got a bit much after a while, just everyone shouting shame at me as I walk around on a holiday.
Yeah.
The walls, you can walk around the whole walls of the city, of the ancient city, and that we told Toby we're going to walk around the walls, and he was really excited. Oh, brilliant, he's really into this. And then we got up there, and he burst into tears and went, but it's a path!
Oh,
he thought he was going to actually get to walk on a balance on a wall the whole way around.
I mean, the thing, young kids do like doing that. If they see a garden wall with bricks, they'll want to walk on it because that's an amazing
Absolutely.
Achievement. Yeah.
I still do, and sometimes still do walk on the wall.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we managed to find a couple of walls that weren't death drops that he could balance on.
Okay.
But I did, at one point, this is a true story, at one point I explained the concept of death to Toby to make him stop wanting to sit on my shoulders.
So he said, I'll kill you unless you...
He was really struggling with his disappointment, and then also the poor thing, he was stood on this path essentially that was just a narrow grey path to him because he couldn't see over the walls either side.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would pick him up and show him, but then he kept begging to go on my shoulders, and I kept saying no, but you can't, it's not safe. And then eventually I had to sit him down and say, Toby, do you know what would happen if you fell?
And what did he say?
And he said no. I said, you would die. And he said, what's die, Daddy? And I said, it means you would not exist ever again. And he looked at me with big wide eyes and went, oh. So that was fun. I introduced death to my 2-year-old.
That's lovely of you. Aren't you nice?
Yeah. Well, I just needed him to understand the severity, why I wasn't being mean.
Surely you should introduce death for when you kill Lucy.
That's true. When I have her murdered in front of him to teach him a valuable life lesson.
I assume, did she die while you were away, or did she survive
she
the starvation?
She did not. Some friends, indeed, some more Canadians were in our house. A friend was having a baby, and her parents were in town from Canada, and so they stayed in our house while we were away.
Hmm, lovely. So, we began to discuss the Weinstein thing when we were last on.
Oh, I need to talk about one other cruise thing first.
Okay, go on then.
You know how people go about check your privilege, and privilege this, and privilege that, and all this entitlement, and all these things, and how tiresome it can be.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, you just need to go on a cruise to realise how valid a point this all is.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, the people on the cruise are the worst people on earth.
Mm.
We discussed on the podcast years ago, three and a half years since we last went on a cruise.
Incorrect.
It's not incorrect because Laura's pregnant with Toby.
It must be incorrect at the end.
Oh, I see. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. It was last week.
No, it was about 18 months ago. Half the time you've just said. So there you go.
Right, okay. So, and we've discussed before about the way people behave in the buffet, including you, who just stand and walk. Although there's the British people who think you have to queue.
Yes. Even though you've got a big round circle of food. And people will make a queue at one tangent to that circle, and that's it, serially.
And so when you walk up past the queue of people standing next to the hash browns because you want to get to the bacon, and you just walk up and take some bacon and walk away, that all the Brits get really tutty.
They Brexit you.
They do. Brexit all over your face.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's... But there's just no... Everyone believes that they should be going first. And it's the strangest thing, because it's my philosophy to try to do everything as efficiently and fairly as possible. So if someone, it clearly makes sense for someone else to go first, then I want them to go first for the greater good of mankind.
Mm.
But no one else on board is operating with this system. Mm. And to the point where you see, because of course most of the crew are Filipino.
Mm.
And for some reason, this seems to be a race that white people still believe should be in servitude. I'm not quite sure why Filipinos got left in that list.
Oh no, it's worse if you're a Chinese, then you believe they actually should be slaves. As I said, when we last went on one, some Chinese people on the boat would literally drop things on the floor in the corridor and then demand that the Filipino person pick it up in as humiliating a way as possible.
Wow.
But I think there's a lot of inter-Asian racism that one doesn't kind of grow up. But there, somebody, an Asian person once told me that they've got the notion of city Asians and jungle Asians. And the city Asians look down upon the jungle Asians. And the jungle Asians are kind of the Filipinos, the Vietnamese and so on. And the city Asians are the sort of the Japanese and the Shanghai or Hong Kong Chinese and that kind of thing. So, yeah, the subtleties of racism know no bounds.
Well, I witnessed people literally just holding rubbish in their hand and just putting it in the hand of one of the staff and walking off. Just shoving it in their hand, not acknowledging them, not speaking to them, just using them literally like a bin.
That's nice.
I saw that happen. I saw so many
times. Did you tell them off?
I did sometimes, but it's very hard. You know, obviously, you witness the incident and the person is gone. I saw people holding doors open for white British people who just barged past. There's no acknowledgement that it had been done.
Mm.
It just makes you just start to get angry and angry, and you just realise, oh my goodness, yes, this entitlement is a thing, and we need to deal with it.
Where did you think Brexit came from?
Well, of course.
Hmm.
So there you go. So there, everyone improve. Has everyone improved?
Yes, they have. They're all better now.
There we go. That's done.
And now, as I was saying, we were talking about
the beginning of Weinstein
last time, and there's the narrative now, of course, is that what everybody knew, and combined with its victim blaming, to have expected any of the people who are at the wrong side of his advances to have come forward earlier. I'm breaking with that consensus.
Do you really have to do this on the podcast?
I'm breaking with that consensus, because if you experience something that you know other people are going to experience as well, yeah, I expect some sort of moral courage to save other people. If I see somebody pushing somebody off a cliff and I'm worried they might push me off the cliff, yeah, I'm going to report it as loudly as I can. What makes it even worse, and this is where...
A better analogy would be you're saying that once you've been pushed off the cliff, you should
warn
everyone else about the person pushing off the cliff.
Oh, no, I said trying to push me off the cliff. Here's the analogy. That is an analogy, but here's where actually it's beyond the pale, and this is no longer even an ambiguous moral situation. A large number of these actresses were paid off and took money for their silence. That is morally reprehensible. That's the end of it. You accepted payment in order to allow other people to be victimized. That's not acceptable. You shouldn't be lionized for it. And anybody who took that payment and is only now cautiously creeping out because somebody braver than you already did, you don't get any kudos from you. You're a disgusting person.
I think you dismiss enormously the impact of sexual abuse. And you
are plenty of these people who admit that what happened was they were asked for to do a massage or whatever, and then they didn't, and they left the hotel room, and they were disgusted, and then they took a $250,000 payout. That's not acceptable, because if you accept that it's acceptable, then you are effectively helping to continue the cycle. We need to inculcate something that, actually, you know what? That is a shameful thing to do. I will be judged. Therefore, it's less culturally expensive for me to actually report this bully, and okay, if he destroys my career, he destroys my career, but other people will be saved from horror. So no, I think that every time that we say it's okay not to report somebody if you feel bad about it, then we are allowing the next person to fall under that umbrella. We have to break that. And it's not victim blaming. It's saying that when you are a victim, you actually still have some more agency, autonomy and human responsibility. And part of it, it's a bit like in France. If you do not report or become involved in trying to prevent a criminal enterprise, you're aiding and abetting that. And that's a crime in itself.
But do you not agree that you are putting the onus of responsibility onto the victim, that which is literally victim blaming?
Yeah,
the
no, I'm not blaming. No.
For the acts incorrect. Is Harvey Weinstein.
No.
He is the person responsible.
That's irrelevant.
For the act.
That's semantic, and it's irrelevant.
It's not irrelevant.
It's completely irrelevant. I don't really care who gets the label of victim. I care about how do these actions stop so that other people do not fall prey to them.
Do you not also understand that things can happen in isolation and you don't understand that there's a greater impact? So you are in a situation where some guy comes onto you and asks you to do something sexual and you don't like it and you tell him to get lost.
And then you threaten to report him and then he pays you $250,000.
I find that more problematic, certainly, but I'm talking more generally. That you seem to believe.
I'm not talking generally. Though I'm talking about the very specific milieu of Hollywood, where these things have been known since the beginning. Well, since before the talkies. This is not. I do not accept that level of naivety. The notion of the stars and the casting couch is as old as the town. Certain people have just taken it as a bargain that they're prepared to sign. Other people may be shocked by the degree to which it goes. But if you want that to stop, the only way you get that to stop is you make a very, very loud noise about it as soon as it happens. And do you know how I know that works? Look what's happened now. Look what's happened the moment people started doing that. Oh, guess what? He's screwed. It's the notion of, I was scared of that he would what? That he would destroy your career? Well, plenty of very brave people in all sorts of spheres have had their careers destroyed because of whistleblowing. That doesn't mean they shouldn't have blown the whistle, and that doesn't mean we shouldn't have said that they were morally correct to blow that whistle. And if you decide that you want to be selfish and you are just going to protect yourself, that's fine, but you need to realize that's a selfish decision. However justifiable and psychologically understandable that decision can make, you cannot then say you're not being deeply selfish and allowing somebody else to fall into that pit.
You're not allowing. The person who is allowing it is the person perpetrating.
That's like saying it's the pit's fault.
No, it's not. A pit is... That's ridiculous. No, Harvey Weinstein has agency. You're denying the agency.
Yes,
of
I
the
am because his
here.
Because his agency is irrelevant. That's why he might as well be a pit that people fall into. Yep.
That's outrageous.
That's not outrageous. What, are you going to reform him, are you?
No, I am going to recognise that he is the actor. He is
so
the
what?
Actor.
Yeah, you're just saying things to make
you
to
deny
make yourself
his
feel
agency
better
in order to put all of the emphasis onto the victim. That's ludicrous.
His agency
you
is irrelevant.
You can argue
John.
That someone accepting
his agency
bribes for their
is
silence
irrelevant.
Is problematic.
His
but
agency
you can't then,
is irrelevant.
That's a ludicrous
his
thing
agency
to say.
Is irrelevant.
Argue that.
The only thing that his agency does is to perpetrate more enormities. What has his agency got to do with ending the problem?
Because if he stops, the problem stops.
How do you stop him?
He stops. What, he you, is well, capable so, well, of stopping. Right, he you, has agency. You're talking about him
irrelevant.
As if he's a helpless victim
irrelevant.
To his own...
I don't care what he is. He might as well be an automaton. Unlike you, I'm not interested in the psychodrama of this.
Funnily enough, you're only interested in saying that the person who is attacked is the one responsible for the attack. That's literally your argument. And you're saying... You're ridiculing my suggesting he has agency.
As you often are. I'm not saying they're responsible for the attack. I'm saying that they, once they know that this is an attack vector, share the responsibility in preventing it from happening again. You know, you might as well say that I don't really give a damn whether Weinstein has agency or not. That agency will only become relevant if he suddenly has a pang of conscience or Jesus finally finds his way into his heart or whatever. His agency here is pretty much a crapshoot as to whether he starts or stops. That's not going to be interesting. What's interesting is how do you stop it happening? What do you guarantee you can do to stop it happening? The way you guarantee that you stop these things happening is that every time somebody is a victim of it, they feel not only empowered, but they feel compelled into reporting it loudly. And if the first few of them lose their jobs, their careers for doing so, they have to still realize that there was a strength and a capital in doing that, in the same way that anybody else who does something brave, who then suffers the consequences for their bravery, it nevertheless is not discounted as being brave because of doing that. I think the narrative is far too much. Don't worry, you never need to say anything. You never need to do anything. You're just a victim. So you have no responsibility in warning other people about that dangerous area. Don't worry about it. Take the payout if you need to. And then eventually, if some journalist 2 decades later with 2 decades worth more of experiences that you could have probably helped to stop have happened, then that's fine. Then you can share in the glory and you can be called brave. No, you don't get that. Sorry. And I say this because actually it's empirically validated that if every victim that doesn't speak out becomes a part of the problem at that point. Because when you're a victim, whether you want to or not, I'm not saying that you want to. It's like saying, you know, a soldier that's conscripted into the war, is the war his fault? Is his conscription chosen? No. But at that point, he has to decide, when he's placed in that horrible circumstance, whether he's going to act ethically or whether he isn't. And I think that is more important, a question of agency, than that there's a war going on or that there's some crazy people who have nominal agency and they've started the war. Effectively, Weinstein has started a sexual war and people are then drafted unwittingly into that war and they then have to decide how they act as people. It's their agency that matters at that point. His agency is pretty much irrelevant because he's decided that he is going to continue doing this forever until he's stopped. That's his decision. That's his agency. He is, you know, if you want to call, you can call him profoundly unrepentant, evil, unsalvageable, whatever you want. That's fine. But all these victims are not, and they can gain a modicum of power in realizing that they are not simply subject to the tumult of his waves. That they can actually swim in the opposite direction, however hard that is, and find a shore for other people. And as long as we continue your narrative of victims have no responsibility because of their victimhood, you're creating more victims. And that's not something I'm interested in doing, even if it makes me feel better because I get to sanctify the victim's experience. Sorry.
But and yet you continue in all of this to act as if... this the position of privilege is astounding that you're taking here. This idea that from your position of not ever having been a victim of this.
A victim of what?
A victim of sexual abuse.
Well, you have been, and I was at the same time.
No, neither of us has been a victim of sexual abuse.
Under the terms of what some of the Harvey Weinstein people are accusing him of, you have been, and I was a witness to it.
No, I know what you're talking about, and no, it doesn't compare.
Well,
I was never in any danger.
Oh, really? You weren't, were you? I know what most of these women, in that sense. They were violated in the same way that you were. A lot of that was to do with massages and putting hands in places they didn't want them to be, which is exactly what happened to you. So let's not. I know that for you think that ladies are more delicate and therefore the psychodrama is bigger, but I don't.
Oh, I'm not. It's so boring when this is your angle. It's not relevant.
I think it is relevant. I think that we need to realize exactly what games were being played by him and decide how we're going to stop this from happening again. And the way you stop that from happening again is not by encouraging victims to keep shtum about it, because that's fine, because victimhood allows you to keep shtum without any moral consequence. We've had that experiment for the last 100 years in Hollywood, John. Sadly, it hasn't worked. So shall we try a new strategy, or shall we continue and feel happy that we're allowing victims in their individual victimhood to wallow, but creating thousands more victims? Is that a better strategy then?
Do you think there might be a third strategy here, one that's slightly more complicated than...
Well, go on then. Tell me.
When you're the victim of sexual abuse, it's your responsibility to prevent that from happening.
No, I don't. If you can suggest another strategy that will work rather than make you feel happy because it's clear-cut and morally lovely, I'd like to hear it.
Sure, and I'll go away and think of one. The fact that I can't throw one off the top of my head.
Well, it's interesting that you can't. It's interesting that you can't.
Well, there are ideas that I
because
certainly
should be,
have.
It's such a big problem. It should be something that we have another solution to. For all I can see at the moment is the usual solution, which is when individuals are attacked. This is the principle of unionism. It's a principle of democracy and everything else. When an individual is attacked, They are powerless until they allow their voice to be heard as part of a greater group. That's the only weapon that an individual has. There is no other weapon.
You create means and opportunities for victims to come together and find other voices and then speak out as one.
But
you create opportunities for that to happen rather than for one person to speak up, be vilified, as people have been.
I know. That's a problem. I know. But that comes hand in hand with also saying, not only is this something that would be lovely for you to do, it's actually a responsibility that you need to take. You still have agency. Just because you're a victim doesn't mean that you're suddenly now an automaton. You then have choices to make, horrible choices that you didn't want to have to make. Some of them will have horrible repercussions on your life, but you still have those choices, and you can still be judged as a moral individual for making the wrong choice at that point. At the moment, you're saying once you are a victim of something, you get a kind of exculpation, get out of jail free card for any further moral decisions that you make. I don't allow that, I'm afraid. I would like to allow that because it would be nice to give somebody some balm after their victimhood.
But apparently when someone is a serial offender, they do get that license. Hand it over to them at that point. Their agency is irrelevant, and
their agency is irrelevant because
just to carry on doing whatever they want.
Did I say they get permission?
Well, seemingly yes.
When did I say they get permission to? I would dearly love that Lord Jesus would strike them down. Clearly, he's not going to. Their own conscience isn't working. What do we have left at that point? We have other people's consciences that are working. That's the only thing we have left. If everybody's conscience stops working and they all merely act to fulfill the selfish id, nothing will change. We need somebody somewhere to act beyond the selfish id. Ideally, that would be the perpetrator. Sadly, decades worth of evidence suggests the perpetrator is not suddenly going to have that switch. Who's left? The victims.
There's someone else you're entirely forgetting. It's people who know it's going on that aren't victims, and there's clearly plenty of those in this circumstance.
Those are utterly reprehensible.
Well, do you not think maybe your emphasis might want to focus there rather than just going after people who've been victimized?
No, I'll tell you why that's not enough. Because the very fact that no victim was actually prepared vocally to speak up meant that these people got their plausible deniability. They said, oh, yes, we heard the rumours, but we didn't know how bad it was. We didn't realise exactly what he was doing. Imagine if every time Harvey Weinstein did this, people came out and you said, I just came out of Harvey Weinstein's hotel room. He tried to rape me. And they said, nonsense, rubbish. You're making this up. You're an attention seeker. Then another one. Then a week later, somebody else did that. Within about 1 or 2 months, he would suddenly realize that his strategy was failing. There would be enough people that the people around him would then say, actually, we do have a moral choice to make here. We can't pretend that it's not happening anymore, or we can't pretend it's just rumors. It's not just rumors when somebody says, it wasn't just a casting couch. This guy tried to rape me. Or, even better, you know what? Go to the police. And I know that that fails too often, but it fails too often because there are too few people who do it. Only a very few brave souls do it. And I know that what I say here goes against everything that polite society would suggest. However, polite society has had its rules in place for the last few decades, and dozens, if not hundreds, of people fell under the bus because of that politeness. And I think at the moment, it's the people around him, and it's, yes, even his victims, who then have a responsibility to start screaming and making a big nuisance of themselves and ignoring every single NDA they've signed to stop the monster from continuing. And if they feel that they can't do that, I'm not saying they should necessarily be punished, but they should be allowed to feel that, yes, that is something that I have chosen, and it is shameful because I am effectively allowing somebody else to fall into that monster's event horizon when I know that I could prevent it. Look at some of the, you know, I think that some people tried sort of to do it. Courtney Love did it a little. People like Even Brad Pitt, he threatened to hit Harvey Weinstein if he ever did anything to his then girlfriend again. And that's a start, but it's not enough. People, we have to have a whole range of people who are furiously reacting to such people, because otherwise the myth of their power is exactly what gives them the strength. They're not actually that powerful. Do you know how I know that? It just took a few reports finally to be publicized and to break through that big mytho-legal power infrastructure that he had, and he's now destroyed. He's finished. He's out of the company, and he'll probably be arrested. And what happened with that? He didn't decide to change, did he?
No.
So wouldn't you prefer that happened a few decades before it did?
Clearly, I would prefer that.
And how would we have had? And what would you have done? What could have happened to ensure that happened?
I feel confident in saying that there would have been a far better and easier route for the people, his colleagues, his staff, the people around him who knew what he was doing, who said nothing. They are the people who should have spoken up decades ago.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I include.
Yeah, but
I include
yeah,
them.
But yeah, that's not. It's not interesting or controversial to name them. So you go after the victims.
No, it is. Yeah. It is, because those people are now claiming that they're victims as well. Those people are cuddling into the narrative. You look very carefully at his various assistants and spokespeople. And this woman said, "Oh, I had to sign an NDA, and that's why I couldn't talk up. But now that I'm not going to be affected by it, and it's not brave to do it. I'm going to do it now, so I can get some kind of Browning points." No, you don't. And as for people who are paid off and took the money and shut up, that's reprehensible. That's not acceptable. Especially those who were affected by him either through an implied or a direct sexual assault, took the money and then continued working with him, and then did things like say how wonderful he was in an Oscar ceremony. No, 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 you don't get to do that. And then when it's convenient, when people braver than you, victims braver than you have come out, you then get to be under their same umbrella. No, no, you get a bit wet in the rain, I'm sorry. Because otherwise you're discounting the very, the moral rectitude of and bravery of those people who did. And yes, just because you're a victim doesn't mean that your moral autonomy goes away. At all. I don't think it does. And it might make it a lot harder to make such decisions, and it might make it very understandable when you feel that you can't, because you just don't have the inner strength to do that. That's fine. But to say that there is no moral decision to be made at all, I think that's actually quite insulting to people who have been victimized, because it effectively says you are now just a passive victim. There's nothing you can or should do about this. And I think that's a terrible thing to say.
I think there's room and a space for retraining culture to understand that, yes, to be a victim is not to be destroyed, is to not to be disempowered. I agree with that.
And even to say, look...
But you, I do not. I still. I you have not convinced me that on this at all. And
well,
I,
who else is going to do it but the victims,
the colleagues, those who are not victims who know that it's happening.
Well, clearly they won't, because they all appear to be venal cowards.
But
and they're paid off
again for some reason that lets them off. But
I'm not letting them off. I'm saying they're venal cowards. They're probably they're quite evil. They're evil people. I'm not letting them off, but they have made their choice. So who's left to make some choices at that point?
Do you think there's... I think back to when I worked at a radio station and I heard about a presenter
mm-hmm.
who people said, oh, we have to warn the teenage boys not to go home with him.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told me this. I never met the guy. I never worked in the same room as him. Someone told me, this is the thing about that guy who doesn't work here anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was 21, 20, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh, well, that sucks. Mm-hmm. It still sits, should I have said something? Should I have gone to the police?
Well, he didn't work there anymore.
He didn't work there anymore. I never met the guy.
So why
just
they...
got told the second, third hand that this was a thing about this guy.
Well, second, third hand, this is a thing about this guy... is different to if you're still working there, you see that guy's there, you see there's a young teenage intern, and he's left in the room on his own, I would warn the teenage intern at that point, and I then would, if I noticed anything untoward happening, I would report it. But second or third hand, you don't know whether that is just gossip. And here's the problem.
Exactly. It sits on my conscience today, decades on.
But you're making a very good point there. You know, you are maybe one of the people, like Harvey's acolytes, the other film stars who are around him and so on. Maybe you are one of them. But if you had actually heard, if one of those boys, and I know it's particularly difficult when you're young, had been empowered to say, this guy is, you won't believe what he did, but here's what he did. You need to believe me. I'm going to shout it from the rafters. If at that point, then you would have known, okay, this isn't for third, fourth hand. I'm hearing it directly from there. And you say, no, it's not good enough just to say, don't let boys go home with him. I am going to report to the police. I'm going to become this person's champion. But as you're saying, because it was second or third hand, there wasn't anything you could do. So,
and as far as I'm aware, always consensual as well.
So who has the power here?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Who has the power here? The power, there's only one powerful lever here, and that's in the hands of the victim, which is a very controversial and topsy-turvy thing to say. But in a way, it's true, because if the victims are empowered to speak up immediately, then everything can change. If they're not, it becomes second, third hand. People like you feel a bit guilty, but you really don't know. You're swimming in this vague sea, and other people who kind of do know, they get their plausible deniability. So we have to work, and I'm not saying that this is merely victim shaming. I'm saying there needs to be a multiple pronged strategy of victim empowering. There needs to be a far more acknowledgement, that a greater acknowledement that whistleblowing in every respect is a noble thing to do. You will get the protection of the state if you do this. And it needs to be clear that even if you fail at that and you cause yourself some damage to your reputation or to your career, you nevertheless have done something noble that you can be proud of. So that part of the moral, otherwise the moral bargaining is, I could do something that apparently is irrelevant because I'm a victim and I don't have to be doing this. Or I could just sit quietly, and as a victim, that costs the same morally.
Whoa. I think where we can find some common ground here is in an agreement that we need to, as a culture, focus on victim empowerment, which is a horrible term, but as opposed,
it
to
is an awful shaming. Term. It makes me want to throw up all over you.
But well, you said it, so I'm quoting.
I know, and I'm throwing up all over myself as well.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
I think that's where we can agree, is that we can start to rewrite how we talk about people who have been the victims of attacks and abuse, and start discussing them in terms of their being powerful, important people of agency rather than destroyed victims.
But then you have to. There is another side. If you do that and you say you have power, what does somebody who has power but refuses to execute it, what do you call those people? You see, you're wanting to have your cake and eat it a bit.
That's where I disagree. It's about, because we're talking about rewriting culture here, so it's not about saying, oh, by the way, you have power, and if you don't use it, you're a baddie. That's not what I'm saying at all. That's ludicrous. And as you've also said, there are some people, you know, there are many people who've been victims of childhood sexual abuse who are then victims as adults have extremely different reasons why they cannot report it, why it becomes something that's repressed, where it becomes something that's not possible. You know, this subject is so much more complex than you're allowing.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about these are very specific power relationships. Somebody is in a position of commercial power. They say, if you want your career to go in this direction, you need to do X. You then refuse to do X. And at that point, or you have X thrust upon you. At that point, you have two choices. That I'm talking about these very transactional situations, which probably shouldn't be, but are. I agree. Where it becomes much more complicated is where you start to go down the routes of complete psychic trauma and all that, and then we get into very different circumstances. But where people most of these people have said, I felt terribly scared, I didn't think anybody would believe me, and I was worried that it would affect my career. That's the, mm-hmm. from the horse's mouth, that's why most of these people say they didn't speak up. I'm saying that none of those reasons is sufficient for you not to have spoken up, sorry. because you're the result of your not speaking up for those reasons is, okay, your career was fine at the end or whatever, but guess what? Another 20, 30, 40 people fell victim because of that. You couldn't have the help.
Because you cannot say, this is where I cannot allow it, this. The because is on Weinstein. It didn't happen because they didn't say anything. It happened because Weinstein continued abusing.
Exactly. If you can stop somebody from doing something, when you have the choice of, the law and morality has a notion of culpability, even if it's not you who's doing it. If you can stop somebody from shooting 20 people and you choose not to, you're saying, oh, that's irrelevant. Your actions there are irrelevant. They're not irrelevant. Of course they're not.
But I'm not saying irrelevant. I'm saying that the because always sits on the shooter. You cannot take the because away from the person doing the act.
You're a part of the causal chain at that point. You could have changed history and you didn't. So I'm sorry if that makes you feel uncomfortable, but that's my point. Yeah, it's uncomfortable, and we need to realize that it's a genuine uncomfortableness created by a genuine choice that we made, whether we wanted to be in the position to make it or not. Choices are not something that are merely things that we make because we want to be in the position of making those choices. Sometimes choices are thrust upon us brutally.
I think you say this all from this extraordinary position of not ever having needed to do any of this.
That's irrelevant because I may get put in that position and I may fail completely.
Right.
I may fail completely. Doesn't mean that just because I fail completely, I want you to make me feel better and saying, oh, yeah, I guess you could have said something and stopped another 100 people from being abused, but you didn't. Never mind, you did nothing wrong. No, at that point, John, I want you to castigate me.
Well, I want to castigate the person who abused 100 other people.
Yeah, you can
Let's change subject because we're nearly finished and this is miserable.
Hold on. You can castigate. No. You see what you're doing is you're assuming there's a dipole here. Why shouldn't you castigate the 100 people as well as the person who abused 100 people as well as the number of people who admitted that they were in the position to help to stop him but didn't?
Because
why can't I castigate both of those?
Because it's so each individual is so much more complicated than someone morally equivalent to the attacker.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why you need to take each case into specific account. And then once the account is there, you don't throw the account into the dustbin. You look at the account and you say, okay, well, you had this moral capital to play with, and you chose not to invest it. And people need to realize that every step of their life is, there's a moral decision to be made, whether you want to or not. And whilst we are not victims at all of this and we haven't had our mental tested, there have been areas where you have been tested where you've had to make an uncomfortable decision based upon a circumstance that was thrust upon you that you didn't wish to be thrust upon you. And nevertheless, you knew that there was a better way to act that might have repercussions against you and a worse way to act that might have led to greater comfort. Otherwise, we get everything unravels and we allow people to do everything from tax evasion to ignoring the strange man next door because we don't want to make a scene. And it's not good enough. Whether we are victims, whether we view other people becoming victims, it seems that unless we're the people perpetrating the crime or the enormity itself, nobody else has a responsibility. No, I think we're our brother's keeper, even when we're talking about something that is happening to us as well as potentially to our brother. And I don't accept your kind of atomization where only the baddies have any responsibility and everybody else gets to kind of wallow. Unacceptable. And more importantly, more empirically, your strategy hasn't worked. It hasn't borne fruit. The fruit's a bit rotten, John. We need to try some new trees.
Let's change subject.
Go on then.
It's my birthday in 2 days.
Well, you have a choice for that. It doesn't have to be.
It's my 40th birthday in 2 days.
You're consuming a lot of resources on this planet. You're not producing enough in return. Why don't you kill yourself?
Well, I feel that at the moment that would upset two people who are important to me.
You see, it's all selfishness. It's important to me. Oh, it's important to me.
Well, I'm important to them too.
Yes.
As unlikely as it seems.
How many Africans are being killed by your continued existence? Have you asked that question?
Well, depends how many I've murdered that day.
Fair enough. And
you're very close to being today's African today.
I know. You're quite racist. So, are you doing anything special? I guess I have to ask.
Nor do you have to ask. It's just, I think it's just more interesting to discuss turning 40. You've done it,
yeah.
Although you're very shy to admit and talk about it.
Well, it's the thing about turning 40 is not turning 40. It's how quickly you'll soon be turning 50. That will be the frightening thing, I guess.
Well, yes, it's unsettling in that I have a friend who has the same birthday as me 10 years earlier. And so he is doing exactly that, and I wrote it for so recently, remember, when we turned 30 and 40, so...
And is he now very upset about it?
No, I think he's taking it in his stride.
Well, not stride, he can't stride anymore. Yes. It's in his hobbly little arthritic...
Taking it in his walk, his staggered walker. What are those things called? Zimmer frames, that's it. That's the joke, isn't it?
Racist,
you have to say Zimmer,
yeah.
You have to say Zimmer frames to do this joke.
Oh, talking about jokes, you know what you've missed? There was a whole new series of John Shuttleworth on Radio 4.
I've got it all on my iPlayer.
Oh, have you?
Yes, I didn't realise it was new. I thought it was extra repeats.
Oh, I don't know. I'd not heard them. I mean, there was...
Oh, cool.
Sounded nice. And there's, I think this... There's also, for those who like it, Ed Reardon's Week, which it sounded good. So there's some good radio comedy coming.
Radio 4 Extras just started repeating Series 2 of In and Out of the Kitchen, which is amazing.
Well, it's good for going to sleep to, I'd imagine.
It's lovely.
What are you going to sleep to at the moment?
I'm going to sleep to listening to The Dead Zone, the old Stephen King book that I read when I was a teenager.
Isn't that too unsettling to go to sleep to?
It was. Like, I got to it last night. Was particularly with Toby up for 3 hours. It was a crappy night, and it was a particularly traumatic section. So that was, I went back. I listened to Counterpoint to go to sleep last night instead. It's very good. It's James Franco reading it out on Audible.
And you think that Toby is to blame for being very disrespectful of sleep? I mean, you're the same, as we've said before. You know, the problem is he's correct, and you have to con him into thinking he isn't.
He's so frustrating.
Well, you should just allow him to sleep in a nest in your room. That's what we did with
Judith. We have built a nest in our room for him to sleep in. He refuses to sleep in it.
What does he do when he comes in, then?
He just wants to be taken back to his room and for us to sit in this bloody chair. That's all he wants.
Why?
And then when we sit in the chair, we have to sit forward so we can see our face, and he just wants to be in control, and it's just this good fight for control.
Little Weinstein.
The bloody boy. So, yeah, we've built this beautiful nest in our room, and we just thought, just come, because when we were on holiday on the boat, we all slept in the same room, and everyone slept, and it was marvellous.
Because that worked, that's what we did, we had the same issue with Judith, we'd come into our room, we'd come into my room, sleep with me, blah, blah, and then eventually... Somebody recommended it, and we were quite suspicious. We got a yoga mat, we put a bit of foam on it, and we put it next to our bed and said, if you feel sad, you need to come into our room and just creep in there. Now, the first few times she tried to do that, she called us from her room to see whether she could come in and want to have a very long conversation at 3 a.m. Eventually, she got the message that she could just creep in, and that's fine. And she will still do that very occasionally now. She's unsettled, and it doesn't wake us up. So maybe what you need to do is you need to find out from somebody how to transition to that so that he feels comfortable about doing that. I know it's probably easier said than done, but it can be done.
Yes, it is.
It can be done. So, at the moment, don't give up.
We just started a new thing where if he manages...
Oh, yeah, you're punishing him, yes, with conkers.
What?
You're punishing him with conkers.
We're not punishing him with conkers. We're rewarding him with conkers.
What's the inverse of reward?
Yes, well, in this case, nothing. Neutrality. There is no punishment. We don't take them away.
I bet you take away the potential of conkerdom. I bet you that's the way he sees it.
I think that's how it's going to backfire.
Yes.
So he came up to our room, and then he just realised... So the idea is, we've told him he's very welcome to come up to our room, but if he comes up, he goes to sleep in our room. That's the deal.
Okay.
So he's very welcome to come up, but then he sleeps in our room. But that's not what he wants, is to come up, wake us up, have us come down to his room, and then scream for an hour about how he doesn't want to go back to sleep, or we're not allowed to. That's his system. So we're sort of trying to bring an end to this. And so we've said, if you can stay in your bed and sleep all night long, then you'll get a conker in the jar. And when there are 5 conkers in the jar, we're going to buy you a new toy train. So it's just like an incentive scheme. So last night, he comes up, he appears next to Laura in our room. No noise at all. And it says, oh no, I've accidentally come up here. He said, I've come up here by accident, Mummy. Can I still have a conker? And we said, if you go back, if you can let Daddy take you back to your room and you go straight back to sleep, then yes, that's fine. You can still have a conker.
And it worked.
And on the way down the stairs, he starts telling me about how he's not going to go back to sleep. And then he starts screaming, and he literally screamed for 2 hours. And then there was a third hour of just sitting up and chatting.
What's interesting is I'm interested
in the this morning, Laura walks into his room at 7 o'clock. She slept an extra half hour this morning, which was a nice little bonus treat for the 3 hours he was awake. Laura walks into his room and he says, Mummy, do I get a conker?
Exactly. These things don't work, do they?
No.
So what's interesting is you had the reason, he realized reasonably, he had this reasonable mind, his forebrain was in control. He said, okay, I came up here by mistake, I'm going downstairs. What was the transition back to little Id? Because you said he started screaming. What led from reasoned argument to scream as you were going down the stairs? Was there a moment?
He just said, I'm not going to go back to sleep, Daddy. I don't want to go to sleep. And I said, yes, you are, Toby.
And then you beat him with a belt, and then he started screaming.
You need to go to sleep, Toby. So we came into, I got him into his room, and he said, but Daddy, I don't want to sleep. I'm not tired, Daddy. I don't want to go to sleep. And so I gave him a cuddle, and then he wouldn't let go of the cuddle. He clamped onto me, and I said, Toby, it's time to lie in your bed now after a while. And I gently put him in his bed, and and then he just started immediately just screaming at the top of his voice about how he wasn't tired, how he didn't want me to sit in the chair, how he didn't want me to go, how he didn't, and he just starts going crazy. And then he just picks an angle and he says I could hear him screaming. Laura took over because I got too cross, and so Laura came down instead, and she said, and he started saying, but I've just got so many feelings to let out.
Well, fair enough.
And he says that, because he realizes it sounds like something valid, and he just says
it's probably
it
something that you told him in a sappy moment.
Well, it's something that Laura would have said, so, you know, when he's really sad about something, Laura would say, have you got some really big feelings, Toby? And he'll say yes, and just try and process the feelings with him.
Manipulative little thing, yes.
Exactly, so then he just feeds that back to
but
us.
He does have those feelings, though. That's the funny thing. I mean, clearly he does.
You
don't get the energy to scream for 3 hours unless you've got something there.
Well, he's not getting what he wants. What he wants is to play.
I don't. It's beyond that, isn't it? There's a real terror of the alternative. The being frustrated about what you want lasts for a certain amount of time, but there has to be something else that's.
Well, then he's just in a feedback loop. Then he's just he gets himself into a state and he can't get out of it.
Where do you put him to bed initially?
And to calm down takes such a long time, and then every time he remembers that he was sad, it re-triggers it and he starts again. And oh, bloody hell!
Where do you put him to bed initially? Where does the bedtime ritual begin? In his bedroom.
Yeah, so we go into his bedroom, and if he has a bath, we have the bath, and then we go into his bedroom, and then we do stories before bed, and we have cuddles, and then he lies in his bed, and we put his CBeebies radio on, and then we sit in the chair and wait for him to fall asleep.
Have you ever tried actually starting the bedtime ritual in the nest in your room, and then you lie on your bed while he goes to sleep?
No, and the reason...
We did that with Judith, and that seemed to be a breakthrough initially.
The reason we don't is it's just impractical, because our bedroom is in the loft, and so he's then two stories above us, and he'd be so freaked out if he wakes up on his own, and it just becomes really impractical. So, yeah, so the next thing is, do we move our bedroom down to the middle floor? And
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that it's something like that, because I'm trying to think when we broke through this nonsense. I think is when we actually said, okay, well, fine, we're not going to fight this. Do you want to sleep in our room tonight? You can be in our nest. And then we just kind of, I think we rely on the bed and on the eye and have earphone on the iPad and watch whatever series we were watching while she was falling asleep in the same room, kind of thing. And that was our evening. We had no evening there thereafter. So you might have to sacrifice your evening for a month or two.
Well,
I spent
3 months this summer sleeping on the floor in his room.
Good for your back.
Just so any of us got any sleep. Well, I had a futon mattress, but just so any of us in the house got any sleep. That was the only way.
And yet you want another one. It's extraordinary.
I go back and forth on that based on this experience.
Although, to be fair, you don't know what the next one's going to be like.
Because we know so many people who the next one just sleeps perfectly, or is even worse somehow.
I mean, Jessica, as you know, my brother's daughter made Toby look like an angel. and the new one, Freddie, is just kind of, you know, he just sleeps and he eats and he goes to sleep and that's it. And this is from the beginning.
I hope for it, because our next door neighbours have got a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they're that many years apart, because that's how long it took before they could get the first one to sleep. And then the second one was just as bad. So I know, no could point be in worse. Getting your hopes up.
No, it's a toss of a coin.
But, oh gosh, it's what's so frustrating is that I just compare him to the Borg. That every time we find an attack that works, he reconfigures his shields.
Of course he does, because he's not an idiot.
And so, but the things that are just meant to be there, you know, the things where you're meant to say, well, you shouldn't do it, but eventually you just, so many people just give up and do the forbidden things, and just the only thing that works is if the kids sleep in the bed with them. Oh, good God, if that would work for us. We would love for him to sleep in the bed with us.
But no,
but he won't do that. All he wants is a circumstance in which we're awake. That's everything he wants to engineer is our being awake.
Okay, maybe you need to deconstruct that and find out what's at the base of that, and then you'll find the key to destroying the Borg colony.
I'm sure it's fear. And
it has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we work so hard to just try to process this stuff with him, to try to get him to vocalise what he's scared of. And we know there's so many he's got so many imaginary fears, and we talk them through with him, but then in the moment, they never seem to be what's at the front of his brain when he wakes up. They never seem to be the cause. It's so frustrating. We just can't get anywhere with this.
Maybe he should just have a sleepover with us.
He's three in a few days, and he's smart. And the two things combined just seem to create a much tougher kid.
All right, well, send him over here. We'll toughen him out. Send him to boot camp.
You'll sleep
here.
Train him, will you?
We'll sleep train him. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, we'll sort that out.
Marvelous. That's good news.
Okay. So glad we finally got to a solution. The final.
40
solution.
Is too old to be doing this.
It is.
My dad was in his late 20s when I was this age. I feel so envious of that.
Rightly so, because this is nonsense. All right, shall we say goodbye to everybody?
Yeah, no, what a thoroughly awful episode that's been.
I'm sure they'll all enjoy it. Very good. Bye-bye.
Bye.